Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. Tonight, we have a very special guest with us, a filmmaker. Bill Howard is in the house. And just as a cautionary note, during some parts of this interview, he may be difficult to understand and hear as he is recording from inside his car. But a very interesting interview all the same. So please welcome my guest, Bill Howard.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Understanding your surroundings, as well as those who help create a moment in time, is just a small portion of what it takes to be an exceptional filmmaker. Bill Howard is a commercial, sports, landscape, and corporate photographer and filmmaker based in North Carolina. Although Bill would consider commercial photography to be his day job, another passion of his, of course, is filmmaking. He began editing and producing Negotiators Lux, a reality TV series for the Reveal Entertainment Network, in June of 2023. Bill has a few movies under his belt, which can be seen on Amazon Prime, as well as on Tubi, such as The Incredulous Case of Aliens, The U.S. Government, and Arnie Smith, Something Walks in the Woods, The Great Dismal, Encounters, The Complete Interviews, Series 1 and 2, working on Series 3, and currently a narrative called The Plantation. In 2019, Bill began working more with videography and cinematography in addition to his photography. The videography portion of his business had produced and filmed over 80 commercials, 10 short films, and he has over 1,000 stock clips in a large variety of subjects. The filmmaking portion of his work blossomed into Whirligig Pictures LLC. In 2021, Bill wrote his first feature screenplay called The Great Dismal, winning the Toronto Film and Script Awards, which he began filming in 2022. Bill has covered such events as NFC Championship, the PGA Championship, the ACC Basketball Tournament, March Madness, International Soccer, and countless professional and collegiate competitions. We had a lot to talk about this evening, so sit back and relax as the interview continues with my guest, Bill Howard. Well, good evening, Bill, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me on here. I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, this is going to be an interesting one. And a bit of a twist, because I'm not quite used to having just interviews with filmmakers, but this one will give everyone kind of a different picture about what it's like to be on the other side of the camera. So this should be good. Now, Bill, usually I start out, because you have a very unique background compared to a lot of the guests that I have on the show. What I think I'm going to do is start you out a little differently and ask you just generally when you may have become interested in, let's just say, the paranormal, extraterrestrial, anything along cryptids, along that line. Where did this all kind of begin for you?
Well, honestly, all my life I've been interested in this type thing. I'm not going to necessarily say the occult, But yeah, you know, you always, as a child, right, you're interested in ghosts or space, or if you're interested in space, then you're talking about, is there life out there, UFOs, aliens. I'm an outdoors guy, so obviously you start talking about Bigfoot, things like that, right? I will say that late 70s, they released Project Blue Book in a paperback form, maybe early 80s. And we made a trip. I live in North Carolina. We made a trip to Raleigh, and I remember my parents allowing me to get Project Blue Book and read through the cases, which I thought was fascinating. Of course, a lot of it was redacted back then as well. But yeah, it's been a lifelong thing that it sparks interest.
You know, especially through the eyes of a filmmaker, when we have extra sensitivity to our surroundings around us. And now Bill is not just a filmmaker. He's actually a very accomplished photographer. And so I think maybe we should jump in on that a little bit, because you have done enough, I'm not going to just say environmental things, you've done just a lot of things that kind of wake up the senses. And for those of us that have experiences in this field, this is where I began as well. And it woke my senses up. Bill, tell them a little bit more about where you fell into the photography aspect and where that led you.
Okay, well, everything before photography, I always kind of almost jokingly say that was my prior life. That was in the workforce, that type thing. But 8 years ago, I went full-time photography, and I may have like a little bit of ADHD. I like, you know, I can't keep focused on one thing. And photography has allowed me to do all kinds of things, because I'm a sports photographer. I'm a commercial photographer. I'm a corporate photographer. I'm a landscape photographer. You name it, I've dabbled in it and have become pretty proficient in it. So it's more than just a jack of all trades in the photography realm. My business really does go through all of that. I just covered a college football game this last weekend. I did a corporate event 2 weeks ago. So it goes everywhere. And then that led into filmmaking.
Interesting.
I understand enough with the photography side, with the, you know, behind the camera, to, if there's something out there, I might be able to photograph it.
Yeah.
Is that a good way to say it?
Yeah.
And I've even captured, I'm sure you've heard of it, being in this genre, I've captured the Brown Mountain Lights in the past. That's here in North Carolina. I was an outdoors writer for 10 years prior to photography. I've covered the Devil's Tramping Ground here in North Carolina as part of my outdoors Halloween column. So yeah, I've been in it all.
Interesting. And I think one of the things too, and I don't know, maybe you've had a different experience with this, but haven't you noticed, especially when you're photographing or filming something of a nature type, landscape type scene, do you not feel, or at least I did, feel a little bit more like you could pick up things, or you could hear things, or you can sometimes hear the sounds of it and then just capture it, almost as if you could hear the sounds playing out in it? What has your experience been like with the connection between your sensitivities, or becoming more open and sensitive doing that type of work?
It absolutely is. And I don't know if you're religious or not. I am. I don't go to church every Sunday, so that, you know, I'm not going to say that way, but you know, there's a part of your mind that clicks in when you're having a religious experience. And when you're out in nature, whether you're photographing or not, if I'm out hunting, for instance, there's a religious experience that triggers in the brain with that connection. Absolutely. Your senses are doing things that they're not doing when you're driving or, you know, walking around the house, that type of stuff. There's a different connection.
Right. And from that, you can almost apply that to certain things that you're filming or photographing.
Right. You know how to connect to it. So when you become hyper-focused is a good word, maybe.
Yeah.
To how can I bring that experience to the viewer? Same thing when I was writing. How do I bring that experience to the reader? You know, so yeah.
Yeah. It's a very different thing, especially, but those of us who love to do photography or even do video shooting or whatever we're doing, especially if you're very serious about it, eventually you'll tap into that. So now that you've got that under your belt and you've been doing that for a few years, how did you fall into just the whole aspect of filmmaking in general? Do you have a degree or a background in that? How did you fall into that?
No degree. Even with photography, I'm self-taught. Mm-hmm. Photography led me into, I enjoyed time lapses,
yeah.
Whether it's day to night. And, you know, this is kind of throwing in the space thing too. So I did a short film called Whirligigs at Night. Mm-hmm. Where I live, whirligigs are our thing. These are like folk art that's mechanical folk art. It's a good way to say it, right? Your little windmill type stuff, but it makes other things move.
Mm-hmm.
And I did every bit of it in slow-mo and had a really beautiful soundtrack that I put behind it. But as I wanted to keep learning like time lapses and getting better with those, that's what pushed me further and further into filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a short film called Tramping Ground with another director producer, and I was the one behind the camera.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the experience because, like I said, my prior life, I was in management. And so it gave me that fulfillment of management again by directing and setting the scenes and making everything in motion become cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it beautiful, right?
Mm-hmm.
But from that, I realized, you know, I don't necessarily want to do shorts. I want to do feature length stuff. I knew how to write. I was an outdoors writer for 10 years. I just needed to learn how to write a script.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So the first script I wrote was called The Great Dismal.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing you do is you write about what you know. So The Great Dismal follows a sports writer who has lost his job with the newspaper. Newspaper fell under, and he gets assigned an outdoors story with an outdoors magazine because there's been a lot of sightings of a very famous cryptid creature, Bigfoot, in the Great Dismal Swamp of North Carolina. And so I put a hunting guide with him. I'm a hunter as well. So, you know, I write about what you know, a writer and a hunter, hunting guide. And they go out to the Great Dismal Swamp looking for Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And that has progressed. So while I was filming that, the season started changing.
Mm-hmm.
When the seasons change, that means continuity is going away because this is supposed to be a 3-day trip. I can't go from dead winter to bright spring green.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to lay off until the next winter to finish the film. And I needed to learn distribution. I knew how to film. Mm-hmm. So I was doing a calendar shoot, 2020, June of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And this one person that I was photographing that was the subject was in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a former CIA agent. And he asked me, you know, he said my accent wasn't Ohioan. And, you know, and he said, so what are you doing up here? And I said, well, I'm actually shooting the whole calendar. I'll be throughout the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, are you going to the Four Corners area? I said, yeah, the person I'm shooting in Nevada, her father was one of the ones that were testing the first nuclear bomb. And she had to write what she observed when the bomb went off. She said it was crazy, you know, that the bomb hits and you know how you throw a pebble in a pond and you have ripples. the ground rippled, mm-hmm. you know. So that was interesting in itself. But yeah, it depends on what time of night would depend on whether I'm in the Four Corners area overnight.
Yeah.
And he said, don't stay there.
Yeah.
Like, okay, why? Well, he carried me out into a cornfield and 7,500 yards. Mm-hmm. He had me lay my phone down in the grass.
Mm-hmm.
He had me turn the phone off and lay it in the grass. We walked out into the cornfield and he proceeded to give me this story about what he did with the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to give too much information because the gentleman didn't have a cell phone. He had a landline. He had a box mounted to the landline so he could tell if somebody was tapping his phones. He's very paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
But not knowing him, I'm also going, is this guy a kook? You know, where he's beyond prepper.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to write his story because obviously I can't contact him as I'm going on camera.
Right.
So I decided to write a story and have three actors tell the story that he told me.
Yep.
And that was called The Incredulous Case of Aliens, U.S. Government, and Arnie Smith. So that film is not true. It's presented as true. It's not true. But it's true to what I was told. Mm-hmm. I just had to portray it differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of times, too, you have to.
Yeah.
Sometimes these things, if there are things that are told or try to be told exactly, but then I don't know. It just depends on what you want your audience to get out of that. Some people say, that's not believable, or maybe that is believable, or I heard it here. I don't know. Do you always, when you're creating and producing and also scripting certain films, do you ever think about how you want the audience to perceive the film?
Absolutely. So we'll finish up with that. So I did that to test distribution. It was very simple film. It was just three interviews with, in between interviews, I'm telling more of the story, but, you know, furthering the storyline.
And Bill, you were describing a new type film that you're doing called Encounters. Let's pick up from where you started with that again, because I think everyone's going to find this to be very interesting.
Okay. So I had an interview with this gentleman, or not an interview. I had a discussion with this gentleman shooting a calendar, and he told me his story. And in 2020, it was June of 2020, if I remember correct. And he told me the Pentagon was going to release that UFOs were real, aliens were real. And again, at this point, I still don't, this guy seems kind of kooky, crazy, that type stuff. But that very next Friday is when the Pentagon released it, and they released it on a Friday, the no news day where nobody watches the news. They released it, and so now I'm like, huh, that's interesting. He also knew I feel like I can say this part. He said he knew an astronaut, very well-known astronaut. He had a picture of him with him. The guy's name is John Glenn, the astronaut. Everybody knows John Glenn. And there was a picture there, but it looked like it was a meet and greet type photo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But when we went back to the house, we were looking for photos of where he worked with the CIA and that type stuff. And there was a photo on his back deck at a birthday party. And John Glenn was there on his back deck at the birthday party. So, so John Glenn really was his friend. The UFOs were released that, yeah, these things might be real. And since 2020, now they're saying that they're otherworldly, releasing a little bit of information, more and more and more. So with Encounters, I was like, well, if the Pentagon, if the government is saying that UFOs are real, and that they're otherworldly, implying an alien or another intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the people that have had, that have been abducted and have had personal encounters, maybe they're not so crazy either.
Mm-hmm.
And so I reached back out to these people that were contacting me. And I happened, between September and October last year, I happened to have a job that was going to carry me throughout the U.S. And I said, okay, I'm going to be in Florida. Is anybody in Florida that wants to talk with me on camera? I'll be happy to interview you. I had a gentleman there that we talked. On the way up, I hit Charleston, South Carolina. Then I hit Ohio, I hit Minnesota, I hit Wisconsin, hit Arizona, you know, so I traveled throughout the U.S. and I interviewed 12 subjects, and I'll call them subjects for this. I interviewed 12 subjects about their one-on-one encounters with UFOs and or aliens and their abductions.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, what can you say? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
As we spoke prior to the camera here, there's not a one of them, I believe, has lied to me. Now, this subject matter can bring out the attention getters.
Yeah.
It can also bring out the people that are mentally unstable. Is not the word I want to use, but it may be the most appropriate. But the ones that aren't quite in reality, it's just the nature of the genre.
Yeah.
And I wanted to show that whether it's true or not, they believe it.
Mm-hmm.
It is their reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are there some that I interviewed that I'm worried about? Sure. There's a couple that stand out. But then in the same respect, did they experience something and that has furthered or has caused the issues, or did they have the issues that what they experienced is the result of?
Mm-hmm.
That I can't tell you. I'm not a psychologist. I can't tell you that part. I just know that their reality is it's real.
Well, I can jump in here and try to put a Band-Aid over some of this stuff, maybe. So the very first thing that most people are probably not aware of is that, which you'll now become aware of if you haven't been, is that depending on who you're telling your story to will also depend on the reaction to your story. For example, if you were to, I'm going to give you a few different examples. Let's say you're a psychic and you pick up that someone's been murdered or buried somewhere or whatever, and you say, I need to tell somebody this. Maybe I should go to an attorney's office and speak to someone there. Or maybe I should go to a policeman's office and speak to someone there. The reaction you're going to get, for an example, like if you're trying to find a body and you go to an attorney's office, some of them might be receptive and open to what you have to say. And they might be able, you might be able to help them solve their case. Okay. But then on the other hand, what this person also does inadvertently at times is makes them into a possible suspect to the situation because they know too much information. So the psychic who might be helped by somebody in a law firm, if they went to the policeman or the police station and told their story there, might all of a sudden mark themselves as being the suspect to the crime. Okay. And so we have different viewpoints and different theories by which people are trained on how they look at, like you say, Bill, circumstances, people, their mental stabilities, everything. If I know for a fact, I am telepathic. I know this. I live it. But if I were to go to a counselor or to a psychologist and they say, do you hear voices? They're going to sit there and look at me and go, I think this person needs medication, right? They're going to discount the fact that I have an ability to use and be able to tap into somebody else's energy and instead label it as something that they've been trained within their own. So like Bill, when you're talking about people telling their stories and you might be concerned about whether or not all their mental capacities are in check, or at least aligned or stabilized. I don't know if it really matters sometimes, because some of the most unstable individuals that I know sometimes are the most psychic, sometimes the most checked in, sometimes the ones who can actually see things that other people cannot see. And that's just based on how the wiring is up here. And so you're telling their story. If they want to believe it, or they want to have people believe in it, then again, you have, guess what? The audience. The audience gets to decide. Do I believe this person? Did he pick the right person to talk about this? Should I believe this person? It always falls into the audience's arms. And again, Bill, once again, if you're a skeptic and you don't believe in this stuff, it's going to be very hard to convince a skeptic of anything of this nature anyway. What has your experience been with that?
Well, and that is exactly the case. And so when I interviewed each of the subjects, I was trying to be very welcoming. I wanted their story. And it's real easy to make it into a documentary, and then you can go wherever you want to with it. So what's the best way to make somebody feel at home? We're going to air every bit of it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to cut it out. I'm not going to make you say what I want you to say. But we're going to clear some things in the beginning. And so I asked some of those questions, such as, you know, what people are going to say, have you had any psychiatric help over this? Well, I had one that he went to a psychohypnotist. I don't know the term there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said, some of this information came out from going to that person. Mm-hmm. What's my follow-up question? Did they lead you in any direction with it? Or did this just come out on its own? Because just like an interviewer, that can happen. And I can lead who I interview where I want them to go. Mm-hmm. We discussed it prior. We can do this for dramatic effect if we want. I didn't want a dramatic effect. These people have real stories. Let's hear the real stories. Mm-hmm. So other questions I would go into that you never hear on a documentary. So I've had three different people that have had alien beings around their bed during sleep paralysis type situation. And they were communicating back and forth. I said, well, how are they communicating? Well, they were talking to me. Was it in English? Was it, it was in my head. Was it your voice you were hearing in your head? Was it an automated voice here in your head? Was it Queen Elizabeth's voice you were hearing in your head? You know, those are questions that they were talking to me that you see on a documentary. Okay, so they were communicating. Mm-hmm. But I wanted more. If you're hearing a voice, I want to know what kind of voice it is. Because I have a voice in my head, and it's usually me talking to myself. Mm-hmm. And we got down to the bottom of that. And it's very, very intriguing, because it's the same way throughout. It's very consistent no matter who the subject is I'm speaking with. Mm-hmm. And that tells me there is a correlation. There is something real with this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we did the interviews where it's just, I don't cut. If we open it up and we close it, and you have everything in between. There's no leads. You see what the person's trying to tell us.
All right. So I have a question for you on this. Just because of my background and everything, and even in doing interviews, sometimes I think about this. So one of the things that, I know even for myself, because I've got several books out there, I talk about my stories all the time. People hear this stuff all the time. But along with hearing this stuff all the time, my question to you is, have you ever run into an individual yet where they've told their story? And even if the story is consistent and they retell it over and over again, and they're basically reliving the experience too. And when you relive the experience over and over and over again, Have you ever considered or thought about what happens if something gets triggered in that individual where they kind of, I don't say go off the deep end or lose it or puts them into a very severe depression or triggers them back to a to these moments in time that are absolutely frightening? Because there's a lot of people too that they don't want to retell their story because they're afraid it's going to happen again or something's going to show up again, or, you know, this is of the alien nature or the material, or they might go into a slump. And I know who you're referring to. You're talking about like a regressionist. I went under a regression. I've had two of them done because of my experiences to try to figure out. But if the counselor or the person who's doing the regression is not skilled enough, they can actually do more damage to the individual that's actually having this done. So my question to you as a filmmaker and an interviewer is this: how do you get your material from the person that you desire to get your material from, who's agreed to do this, without causing any kind of additional, I don't want to use the word pain, but triggering back to those moments that, excuse me, might have been uncomfortable? Have you thought about that at all?
I have thought about it, and I am not a trained person in that regards. As far as an aggressive side, I'm a fairly big fella. So I'm not worried about if somebody were to come at me. As something for the person that I'm interviewing, though, if something's there, the only thing I can do is offer them comfort and look, you do not have to tell me something. Mm-hmm. If something is leaning the wrong way, if you start feeling something inside, cut it. We do not have to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about unicorns and rainbows if you want instead.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly fine with that. If there's any, in fact, we had, I've had two interviews in which, no, excuse me, I've had three interviews in which the person told me their story. And then as they're getting to the story, yes, I could tell there was something affecting them. And they were like, is there any way we can cut this? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But also in my promise to the audience and the promise made in to the beginning, said, I'm going to cut it, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut the audio, and I'm going to explain why I've cut the audio. Or in one case, I did cut the actual video, but I put an explanation. We cut this because of the subject matter. It was involving some family as well.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and the interviewer or the interviewee did not wish to have this aired. I was a little worried that you might be able to understand what they're saying just by reading lips, for instance.
Yeah.
So I cut that video out. I had another one. So out of the 12 interviews I've done, well, excuse me, 10 interviews I've done, is 12 episodes, is 6 episodes for season 1, 6 for season 2. Season 2 will be coming out sometime in December. But there's 10 interviews for these first two seasons. One of the people we interviewed throughout, and he told me in the beginning that I'm not sure if I want to be known. So I had one camera on him and one camera on me. And then the camera that's over his shoulder on me, he decided afterwards, yeah, I don't want to be known. So that's the interview with John Doe. And even the interview over top of my shoulder, he's blurred out.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
I also, when I finished the episodes, I sent the episodes to the people to get a further confirmation. Are you cool with this going out?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have them sign paperwork? You know,
yes.
You have to.
And we also at the beginning of each episode, I want you to state your name, mm-hmm. and whether you agree to be on camera for this interview. So mm-hmm. we've got it both through that, because that actually airs on the episode.
Yeah. And it's tricky, you know, because there are some people that have really, really compelling stories, and they're interesting, and they're sometimes almost unbelievable, but yet But yet in the world that we live in, where more people are now coming forward with a story or not as shy to be judged after telling their story, it is still important work. And so it just helps to engage the audience a little bit more, break down some barriers, and get a message out that, you know, sometimes we're just not always alone like we think we are in this universe. And so
that's the key to the interviews there. Exactly. It's a two part thing of doing this. Is one is to show that these are real people. They're not kooks. And two, for those that have had experiences, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. And the people that I've interviewed, every one of them has said it was very, you know, therapeutic, the weight was lifted from their shoulders. Mm-hmm. It was their coming out party, except we're dealing with extraterrestrials and alien abductions rather than sexuality.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a whole different ball game, but I'm actually very thankful because I had to remain silent myself for being a college professor as long as I could. I had a lot of experiences in my classroom, and then I couldn't deny it anymore, and neither could my students. And so, you know, I had an occasional ghost class afterwards, but that was like after hours. That wasn't like during the class session. And so, you know, the thing is then even then, one time I took a poll. How many of you feel you have had some type of paranormal experience? And 80% of those in my class would always raise their hand. And the other part was like the very diehard skeptic, didn't want to hear about it, crossed over religious, you know, beliefs, did this, went against their value system, thought it was the demon, you know, everything that goes along with it. And some of these cases might be demonic. I know that even with my interviewing people on this show, I have had those that have had demonic entities within their homes actually come through and attack me while we were doing the shows. And so it's like, this stuff is not always imagined and made up. And those that, by the way, those that want to have their 5 minutes of whatever, usually it pretty much comes out during an interview. You get a sense that something's not quite right here. But a lot of people too, most people are going to be relatively genuine that you've discovered as well. Right. What was your most, have you ever had an experience? Have you evolved more? I guess that's where I'm coming from here. Have you, since, even though you didn't necessarily start out in your life, you know, full-fledged paranormal, extraterrestrial, or whatever, cryptid, somehow you fell into it with these types of movies. Have you evolved to the point where you're having any kind of unusual experiences yourself?
It's a very good question. So originally Encounters was meant to be a docuseries, and then we converted to a documentary, and then we converted to a docuseries. Mm-hmm. One of the other reasons I did so is the very first interview, I was warned about going down this line. The second interview on the way, so the first interview was in Florida. Second interview was in South Carolina. I live in North Carolina. The second interview gave me the same warning. I'd already had the warning from the person that I was doing that I did the calendar shoot with, although it wasn't about going into this genre. It was just about where I was going to be, right? So when I left South Carolina, I'm in a Jeep right now, but I have an FJ Cruiser, and the FJ Cruiser has this little compass that's up on the dash. Mm-hmm. and an inclinometer and stuff up there too. Well, I'm on I-95, which is a north-south route, dead straight road. I'm dead north, and I've had like GPS kind of throw me off the road or twirl around at times, that type thing, but my compass all of a sudden is spinning around. Mm-hmm. And it had never done, I've never had a malfunction on the compass on the FJ. I took the cell phone and I recorded it for a few minutes and was like, this is really odd, you know, that type thing. And then all of a sudden the GPS was throwing me like 10 miles off of I-95. Mm. Like I might be in water is what it was showing me.
Yeah.
And you know, it just triggers things, you know, like at that point I'm going, okay, I was warned about it. So now am I observing it? And that's why I'm experiencing, or not necessarily observing it. Now this has happened. Am I going to blame it on what they were warning me for? And that's one of the things I tried to look at during the interviews as well is, okay, did they see a satellite flying overhead, but because they're on the lookout for UFOs, it's automatically a UFO? It's because my compass is doing weird and the GPS is doing weird. Is that because I've been warned that, yes, now I'm kind of on the radar in this aspect? But I've never had that compass fail again. Yes, GPS all the time on the phone will spin me around at times, but it never throws me 10 miles off the road. But later on, I had, again, this genre can bring out interesting people. Some are attention seekers. And I had someone attack me through social media that almost, he's almost cultish, and that whoever followed him is his followers only. And then he had an ex-girlfriend contact me and had several other people contact me and say, look, stay away from this dude. He's bad news. Just don't worry about him. He's upset because you're actually doing something for this community. He's been promising it, hadn't done anything, that type of stuff. So, so we had that. And then in the Four Corners, well, I was north of the Four Corners area, maybe 30 miles, 45 miles. And off on the right, I saw this light that just kept getting increasingly brighter and brighter and brighter. Much more so than a star.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would dim out to nothing. A few minutes later, I'm still driving, and it's bright enough that it's catching my eye. And so I turn and I can see it's just getting brighter and brighter. I pull over and I try to record it.
Mm-hmm.
I got the recordings for it. I'm a photographer and filmmaker. I actually had the good camera, you know, up on the front seat, and I'm recording it with 8K resolution at night. And so I got that. There was no airport in that direction. And the way the light would brighten and dim, I couldn't see how it would be an airplane anyway, because even if they were turning, they do dim out, but I understand how that looks comparatively. So that was just strange to me. But I never did figure out what that was. And then...
Did that light... Was it kind of like a, I refer them like an orb mass. Was it like an orb type mass, or do you think that that was actually a solid structure of some sort that you saw this light? Because, and a lot of times you can tell too that if they seem to be well controlled and they seem to know what they're doing, that's interesting. And I always call it kind of propelling. Once in a while, too, you can see the light get brighter, like, you know, they're propelling through the air.
This was a very, it started off just a very minute pinpoint, or nothing, but it would be very, like one of your dimmest stars.
Yeah.
But then it would be bright enough that it would be like if a helicopter was, you know, several hundred yards from you with a spotlight on you.
Yeah.
And then there was no sweep. It would just get more and more intense, mm-hmm. and then it would dim down to absolutely nothing. No blinking, just mm-hmm. very bright. And I would say this would go over like 45 seconds or so mm-hmm. from the dim to the bright and then the dim out. Mm-hmm. And again, I've got that on camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Arizona, on that same trip, it's the next day, I'm pulling to a gas station. I'm pumping gas. The FJ loves gas.
Literally.
And I'm looking up in the sky. There's a silver metallic object. Mm-hmm. At first, I'm trying to decipher whether it's a craft, and I'm not meaning a UFO, but some type, like airplane, something like that, yeah. Or if it's even a, like a Mylar balloon.
Mm-hmm.
And it just reads in my mind that it's maybe somewhere between those altitudes. And so I'm watching it. I'm like, well, I jump in, grab the camera, I'm run to the other side of the canopy of the gas tank, and now it's gone.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to record that, but I saw it. Mm-hmm. And this is all on the same trip.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my daughter got engaged, and she... This is in October, so we're having an I Do barbecue for, and I contact the company I'm working for, and I said, look, is there any way I can take 3 days off? I'm going to be in Texas. Let me drive from Texas home, go to the I Do barbecue, I'll drive back, and then we'll resume.
Mm-hmm.
And they were great company to work for. They said, what if we just get some plane tickets and you fly home and then fly back? Sure. So I fly out of Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've got the window seat, Southwest Airlines, I'm looking out, and I catch this little dot that's coming, you know, by, it, like, lower altitude than we are, but I can see it across the landscape. Cell phone, I start recording it, I capture it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, the same thing, except it's going the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
So this means it's going faster than this plane. There's no wings. Again, this is with a cell phone, so even with a 4K, the resolution of the pixels isn't the same as a real camera.
Yeah.
It just means how many pixels it has.
Yeah.
But I've got that, and, you know, I'm sitting here going, God, is this just something because it's in my mind now that something that is just common, but I'm trying to make it into something else?
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. I've listed, what, 4 or 5 things here for you so far, and I'm not done yet. And I'm like, you know, this is how the people that I interview can happen, is they experience something real, and then it just keeps compounding because it's easier for the mind to describe it as something weird rather than something real.
Yeah. Yeah. I think have you ever been up, I mean, to me, I always wonder about this because there's always a lot of unidentified aerial phenomena activity that does occur. And the thing is there are times when I used to sit in the window seat of the airplane, be really dark at night, you know, and then most people just put the shades down. But there are times when I've looked out that window, and I'm sure a lot of people have the same thought. Gee, I wonder if I'm going to see something flying by me up here or whatever. You hear of these reports all the time from, now, not all the time, they could lose their job over this. So I'm going to rephrase that comment. The airline pilots, where they have things literally coming at them and then they dodge out of the way at the last second. And so a lot of times they can't sit there and go, they do probably report this, you know, where you can't hear it, but they're reporting that something's coming at them. It's a light, it's this and that. And there have been people, air pilots that have literally lost their jobs. If they even mumble or whisper a word that this, cause they would put all their guests at panic, you know, the people, flying the plane at panic, and they probably would, you know, it's a big business, you know, you don't want to sit there and kill your business by any of that. There are times when my plane has been, I think, hit by lightning, although am I really sure it was lightning? It might have been something else, right? Well, nobody's going to think about that. Yeah. Do you do a lot of flying?
Not a lot, no. I enjoy driving. I'm a photographer, so if I drive, I get to do landscapes and stuff to whatever I'm headed toward.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, occasionally, and am I scared of flying? No. But I do think a lot of it has to do with your brain is trying to rationalize things.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's no telling. I mean, I distinctly remember at my parents' house one time, I was looking up and a star just increasingly got brighter and brighter and brighter and dimming out again. And this is long before this stuff, but yeah. In my head, I'm going like, at that time, I'm going, did I just see a quasar?
Yeah, I know.
A star explode, or was it a meteor that was just happened to head right straight toward me? You know, right. But it's what your mindset is at the time, I guess. And you're trying to rationalize what your reality is in that situation. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, if I see something metallic flying overhead, even if I can't see the wings, it's a plane.
Mm-hmm.
My youngest son, we were driving around one day, and the classical view of a flying saucer, you know, the thin straight line and the bulb in the middle.
Yeah,
we could see it, but I instantly knew what it was. I said, "Keep watching it, Cooper. Keep watching it." And then finally, you saw the plane tilt a little more, and what we saw with the bulb was just one of the wings,
yeah,
slightly above. But if we watched it long enough, we could tell it was a wing as it turned.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to get fooled in that situation. But then again, there's times when it's not being fooled. It's something I really just cannot explain.
Have you ever run into that with the types of filters that you may even have on your camera or on your film camera, where things are actually being eliminated, even if they are technically there? What's your thought to that?
It's a very good question. For one thing, you can put certain filters on there and make whatever orbs you want. And then there's other things like, so I shoot a gambit of things. One of the things I shoot is like sunspots.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So one of the camera bodies I got several years ago had a 1/8,000th of a second shutter speed, and I could drop down to ISO 32, which, if you know anything about cameras, that means it's letting in very little light.
Right.
And then I cranked the f-stop up. I think I was probably at least f-16, if not more. And I was just trying to see, without a filter on there, how well it would capture the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun's blown out still, but everything around it is very dark. It also had, it had 8 frames per second. So every 1/8 of a second, it would fire a shot. And so I would, and you don't want to hold your camera up to the sun like that very long anyway, because it'll burn a hole right through the sensor, using a long lens especially.
Right.
So I was using a 70 to 200 lens at 200 millimeters. Pop, 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 and I'd bring it down.
Yep.
Pop, 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 bring it down. Well, I captured something, and out of all those shots, it was only on 2 frames. One side of the, on one photo, it was on the far right, kind of like at the 2 o'clock position.
Yeah.
And then the next photo was around the 7:30 position, between 7 and 8, on the other side of the sun. Have no idea what it was. I can tell you it was not a fly, because I was focused at infinity.
Oh.
And this, you could see the light on the edge of the object,
mm-hmm.
where the sun was hitting it. And it, so up in this position, you saw the light here. This position, you saw the light hitting it there. Otherwise, it was a black object. I did, I cannot remember the site I go to, but I was trying to find out if there was any satellites or anything like that at that time. Nothing that I've been lucky enough to catch it crossing the sun.
Yeah.
Now, we had the Mercury transit 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
4 years ago. I did a full shot of Mercury crossing the sun there. So I know kind of what I'm doing with that stuff. My mind is going, is it an asteroid that mm-hmm. passed through? But you don't typically have asteroids on between Earth and the sun. The asteroids are on the other side. That's where the asteroid belts are. But mm-hmm. we do have space debris everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Could it have been something like that? I guess. But I did make a YouTube video with the classic headline, because that's what gets people to go there. You know, so you put, did I capture a UFO when I was photographing the sun, right?
Right, right. Exactly.
Technically, it is a UFO. I have no idea what it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way for me to identify it.
Right. And when it's at a distance like that, that makes it even a little bit more challenging. Even if you had the strongest, telescope or something on it, and you think you see what you see, just one certain angle, turn or twist of it can take a regular, even an airplane object, and make it look very questionable. Well, have you?
I've got a very crisp shot with the cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm still in Austin because I was in that area for about a week. And I actually stayed with a friend down there because the jobs that I had there. And I captured a round metallic object outside of Austin. And I was at a stoplight. I saw it and I was like, what is this? It's not a balloon because it's not moving. It's not doing anything with the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I keep staring at it and I get the camera or the cell phone, and I get two shots of it. And I need to record it. So I've got a Samsung Note 10 Plus. I've never had any issues pressing record for the video. Never.
Mm-hmm.
It was grayed out. It would not let me video whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did get the two stills, but I just could not do the video. So mm-hmm. The light turned green. I had to drive through. I drove through, found a spot where I could pull off on the side of the road, somewhat safe, get out, and couldn't find it. It was gone.
Yeah.
So I turned around at a Dollar General, mm-hmm. drove back through the light, came back up, and I tried to time myself where I'd be at the light again. I'm in the exact same spot, and it's not there.
Yeah.
I've checked everything. There's no power lines that go through that area. And again, if it's a Mylar balloon, because that's the best description I can give it, is the roundness of a Mylar balloon.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a Mylar balloon, it would, just the slightest breeze is going to push it. Right. This was dead still.
Mm-hmm.
I called my wife and told her, I said, look, I was looking at it and she thought I'd wreck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, where did this go? This does not make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And this is right after the air flights where I've seen, I'm like,
yep.
The world. And I've since seen images, even from some of the people I've interviewed, where they have similar either descriptions or they've taken similar photos of a metallic BB held at arm length,
mm-hmm.
is what it would look like, a silver BB.
Yeah.
And what is it? I don't know. And that's the thing with the encounters. And I guess where I was leading with this point was, I switched to the docuseries because if I'm encountering this stuff, and it's like you said, it's easy to show that he's doing that for the dramatic effect. This was their stories. So encounters, the docuseries, it needs to be their stories. I do not need to say anything about what I've found. Because I don't want people to discredit what they've had based on my experience since I started shooting it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do something completely different about what I've had, and I can bring their stuff in with that.
Mm-hmm.
But for the docuseries, it needs to be their stories,
mm-hmm.
because it's their reality. And as far as I can tell, they have not lied to me. They were not attention getters.
So where can people find you? First of all, let's start with your work that you've done, either your documentaries or your docu-series. Where can they find that information?
Yeah, so I reached out to the UFO community about the encounters thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they love the fact that I was doing that very raw, that the show that I'm not trying to sensationalize it.
Mm-hmm.
But Encounters, it's called Encounters, the Complete Interviews. It is currently on Amazon. And one of the other things, I wanted it to be free. However, Amazon has got a rent or buy. It is coming to Tubi. It is not on Tubi yet, but it is coming to Tubi. On Tubi, it will be free.
Mm-hmm.
So how often are you going to hear a filmmaker say, if you don't want to buy it, wait, you can watch it for free?
Yeah, free on Tubi.
I wasn't doing that for money. I was doing that for their stories. I was doing that for them. I was doing that for this community.
Yeah.
So Encounters can be found on Amazon presently, coming to Tubi soon. Something Walks in the Woods is it's a mockumentary based on Native American lore, and it is on Tubi, Apple TV, you name it. It's like on 20-something streaming services, mm-hmm. but it's something walks in the woods. Mm-hmm. Then we have the Great Dismal, which is a narrative film that I've done, and it's somewhat of a Bigfoot movie that I jokingly say is a Scooby-Doo mystery. mm-hmm. But it is on Amazon. It's on Tubi presently, as well as several other stations. Reveal Entertainment. I do some work for Reveal Entertainment. I do a bi-weekly TV show called Negotiators Lux, which is a reality real estate TV show. And that's on Reveal. Reveal is free to subscribe.
Free to watch. You don't have to buy or rent anything there. So, yeah, you can find all of that there, including Incredulous Case of Aliens, the U.S. Government, and Arnie Smith is also on Reveal.
On behalf of the show and on behalf of everybody, thank you so much for being with us today.